Thank you. Please be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Tarrant Regional Water District versus Drag.
May it please the court, this is Shannon Ratliff to present argument to petitioner. Petitioner reserves 6 minutes for rebuttal.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. Mr. Nisely and I are here today on behalf of the Tarrant County Authority complaining of a judgment of the Court of Appeals affirming a multi-million dollar judgment against the authority based upon inverse condemnation of the Bragg Ranch. We had asked that a copy of Defendant's Exhibit 18 be distributed to the court, which is a simplified chart, a graph of the physical situation that existed and that exists in this case. And on that, you will find the Richmond Chambers Reservoir, which is a reservoir operated and maintained by the authority, as well as a separate reservoir at Cedar Creek. Also, you will find the location of two gauges, the location of the Bragg Ranch, which is bisected by the Trinity River, and also the Tuwakini Creek runs through it. As was clear at the time of the trial in this case, and as one of the plaintiff's experts said, this graph is oversimplified because it does not contain hundreds of tributaries which run into the Trinity River. The questions here are whether there is evidence that will support causation, whether there is evidence that will support inverse condemnation, and whether the trial court erred in trying all of this before a jury instead of bifurcating as the district had asked. We have other issues, but unless the court has questions, I would like to try to concentrate on those three.
Could you start by telling us what the standard for causation should be in a case like this?
The standard for causation, I believe, should be that but for the construction of the improvement, there would not have been either a damaging or a taking of the property.
Does that mean that it is a proximate cause, or should it be the proximate cause?
I believe that it only needs to be a cause, but it needs to be a cause that directly results from the construction. The claim here is that the construction and operation of this reservoir in and of itself inversely condemned the Bragg Ranch, which is located about 7 to 24 river miles down the Trinity River. It is also located about 7 or 8 miles across an area. If you recall, throughout the briefing in this case, the claim has been made that this reservoir and this dam was aimed immediately at the Bragg Ranch. That omits the fact that there is intervening property of about 7 to 8 miles between that outlet and the Bragg Ranch, even if you go as the crow flies as opposed to river miles. Now, it's interesting to me, both on the taking issue and on the question of whether they could establish cause, that the plaintiffs concede that not every flood on the Bragg Ranch is the responsibility of the authority even after the dam was built. It is clear that this property has always been subject to inundation.
Is that important to your position, that you cannot have a taking unless every flood now from the day after the dam was built to now causes a distinct set of damages to the property as a result of the dam?
I think it's important in this regard, and that is it does require that a plaintiff establish what it was about the district's construction and operation in a particular flood caused damage to the ranch, whereas another flood, same operations, no damage. I do think it's important there. I also think it is an important fact. If they're saying the mere construction and operation of this dam resulted in an inverse condemnation of the ranch, how do they explain that it does not invariably do so? And as a matter of fact, one of the points made by the plaintiffs in this case is that on hundreds of occasions, the authority had released more water than would have naturally flowed had the dam not been there. And yet they did not and could not document hundreds of floods. Now the fact of the matter is, in terms of this case, what they have now said is the changes that destroyed this ranch aren't addressed by computer models or data analysis. I would submit to you, their experts were not present at the Drag Ranch when the damage occurred. They were testifying, as experts normally would, from data and from analyses. The plaintiffs have now apparently renounced that.
Well, let me ask you, the distinction seems to be that I think I hear two arguments being, one is that this was nothing more than more of the same, and what degree, at what point do you have to pass to distinguish it as more of the same, meaning just more flooding than before, versus this fundamentally was different than flooding. It changed the nature of the flooding so dramatically that it was a distinct cause.
Okay, let's deal with that. They reject the computer analyses that would take a discharge at the dam and take it down the Trinity River to the Drag Ranch. They say both the ones the district used and their own, they say, we can't tell you what happened at the Drag Ranch. We don't know. Well, we can't tell you what percentage of the water that flowed onto the Drag Ranch came from the discharges from this dam.
Well, let me
okay,
just
maybe I'm missing
backtrack a minute, because rather than get into the evidence to support those two theories, is that a distinction that makes a difference in our legal analysis as to whether it's just one more grain of sand in the typical type of flooding or whether it's a fundamentally different thing?
There are clearly situations, and this court's faced them in cases, there are clearly situations where if I'm discharging water directly onto your property, that is an entirely different matter than if the water is simply following a natural gradient of a stream or the natural gradient of the property.
So if the proof showed that there was a cause in fact between this improvement and a fundamental change in the nature of the flooding, and we can argue about whether the evidence was sufficient to get you there or the reliability of it, that would be enough as a legal matter in terms of the analysis to create a distinction between.
I believe that the law would be that if they could establish that the flooding was different in character in the sense of it was more frequent, and they go through a lot of these words in this record. I believe if they did that, and they could attribute how much of that frequency is the result of this facility.
Well, but what I was reading was not so much frequency as character.
All right, I'm not sure. Perhaps I'm under. I know they use the word character. The only thing I can hook that to is they talk about surges. You can search this record. You will not find one measurement of that surge.
Well, and again, I want to get away from the evidence. I want to get more to the
if they could establish that there was a surge of water that because of the construction and operation of this dam that invaded the Drag Ranch and that it did it repeatedly, then they would have a case on it. Because I think we agree that if I have increased the frequency of the flooding, I've increased the severity of the flooding, I've changed the nature of the flooding.
Okay. So that's the analysis.
And that is caused by the construction and operation of my facility, then I think we're we're dead into a taking case.
So we really are arguing about the evidence then?
We're arguing about the evidence clearly.
And not the legal standard so much.
Well, I believe in terms of inverse condemnation, there's a question about standard, because in this instance, if you recall, the trial judge found, as a matter of law, that the taking occurred on May 7th, 1990. That was the first discharge in a flood condition from the Richmond Chamber Reservoir. Now, how that meets the test for repeated flooding in order to arrive at an inverse condemnation, I think, is a legal test. But in terms of the principal attack that we make on the judgment below, what we're seeing here is it's one thing to say that it changed the character, but that doesn't dispense with the proof. They talk about these surges, and yet they're experts. All you have in the record is their conclusion, because they've now disavowed the X4 as necessary for their proof. They've said it's not data-driven. So what drives it?
I have a question about X4, specifically on page 17 of the respondent's amended response brief on the merits. They talk about the X4, and they say that they demonstrated through that computer modeling that they compared the natural flows with the reservoir altered flows. Where does the X4, where from and to does the X4 measure those flows?
Well, first of all, the X4 was based on, in terms of the amount of water from the dam structure itself through the gates, the X4 was not based on actual flows. It was based upon calculated flows based upon 10-year flood, 25-year flood, 50-year flood, 100-year flood.
Flows, but how far downstream?
At the dam. They said that there was inadequate gauging of rain gauges, river gauges, all of that, for them to say with any accuracy where that water that was discharged at the dam, according to their theoretical calculation, whether it even reached the range. Because they said, we didn't do that study. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I thought is interesting is their experts have said they were originally asked to determine how much water was coming onto the ranch during the floods and whether the source of that water was the reservoir. The experts said once we eventually got into it, we realized there wasn't enough data to do an accurate job, and you know, basically for us to do that, we'd just be taking money away from the Bragg Ranch Estate. They said we can't separate out the water from the river and the water from the dam.
What significance do we give the eyewitness testimony?
The eyewitness testimony, I think, not to make light of it, but I kind of call it like in a personal injury case, it was kind of grunt testimony. Those people couldn't testify to causation. Because first of all, they were standing at the ranch. They were observing the situation after the flood, and they just said, boy, it looks worse down here than it did before. Well, as we point out in the brief, there's several reasons for that. One, the 1990s were one of the wettest periods that had ever been there. In fact, those witnesses, with the possible exception of one, had never been on the ranch prior to Mr. Gregg owning it. And so it occurs to me that causation from a remote facility is particularly one that is expert-driven, because a layperson can stand there and say, I watched the water come down and I watched it destroy the road or the levee. That layperson can't tell us where that water came from. And if you look back at the Defendant's Exhibit 18, you'll see there is a very large tributary, Waukene Creek, that runs into the ranch below Richmond Chambers. You are talking about a drainage area here, 12,000 square miles. You are talking about 7 or 8 Corps of Engineers flood control dams. You're talking about 7 or 8 water supply dams. And in this case, plaintiffs pled that originally, that the other reservoir, Cedar Creek, had caused a part of the flooding on the Grag Ranch. They dropped that part of this.
Were you required to file a motion for new trial to complain about excessiveness of damages?
Your Honor, I have to go back and look at our motion for new trial. I thought that we, in terms of excessiveness, I would just have to look. I apologize. I can look that up. Hopefully I have an answer for you.
Mr. Ratliff,
yes,
in looking at the causation issue,
right.
If we were to disagree with your Havner-Robinson-Daubert arguments, is there legally sufficient evidence of causation even reviewing the expert testimony that was offered by the plaintiffs?
No, even
taking it into account?
You're still not, because of the point that Justice Owen made, and that is they never attempted to measure what was going on at the ranch. They never attempted to measure what happened once the water came out of the stilling basin and ran to the channel into the Trinity. They never measured it there.
In your view, could the plaintiffs ever, absent a total taking, absent this being a new reservoir, could the plaintiffs ever prevail without having had rain gauges and also water flow gauges up on the ranch before the dam was completed and had its first discharge?
I'm not enough of a hydrologist to know, but I would have to be candid. I think it would be quite difficult, and I think that's what's pointed out, I believe, in the Wickham case, where they say basically when this water goes in with the flood water, that destroys an inverse condemnation, because there's no way to know or to parse out what occurred.
But again, that's where I get confused.
All right.
If it's just water levels and measurements, it seems to me that the argument is it's just more of the same. It's just still flooding, but it's just more water. Whereas the argument here is the dam caused a fundamental change in the nature, not really the amount necessarily, but the nature of the flooding. It happened quickly to prevent time to get cattle out. It wasn't a slow rise. And that's the distinction on the hydrology.
I think that is the distinction they're trying to make. But many of their quotes where they say the floods were worse, what they are saying is if you go down the Oakwood gauge, it was higher than it had been before. Not that it necessarily, because they've already disclaimed that they can tie destruction to something coming.
But if we were to comb the record, which we're going to have to do, and there were evidence that the character of flooding changed dramatically, or changed before the dam versus after the dam, and that fundamental change in character is traceable to the improvement, then you would say they've made their case.
I would say that if you can do that on something other than simply the ipsy-dixit of the experts,
okay,
then you have at least proved a case that the dam and its operation had caused a destruction of taking of property.
So regardless of more flooding, less flooding, that becomes less relevant. It's more the nature that
but
we can focus on.
I think
on.
It's important in analyzing the record to recognize that when they say worse flooding in many instances, all they're talking about is there was 4.5 feet of water on the Grag Ranch, and if some of their calculations might have been right, it might have added another 2.5 inches on top.
But again, it's not the amount, it's the nature. If it was added quickly, that is what I understand to be the problem. There were cattle and you couldn't move them out quickly enough. It used to be a slow rise, now it's a
all
big rise.
All the evidence of these plaintiffs is they never lost a cow. They always were able to get them out, but they had hours in order to do so. There was a subsequent lesson. They lost the cattle. We don't know the circumstances under which you did it.
But again, level might not matter as much as you'd agree that what we need to focus on is if there is a fundamental change in the characteristics of the flooding that is traceable to this improvement, after looking through the evidence, they would have made their case.
I think those would be the things you would look at.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Glenn Sod will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, this case is not now and it never has been about causing floods by this lake. I represent ranchers He plied their trade on a ranch that was designed to take advantage of the free fertilizer from floods. Water would back in behind an extensive set of constructed levees and deposit free fertilizer. We love floods. We never have said there was one more flood, not one, caused by this lake. This case is about nothing but drastic changes in the character of flooding. Floods came quicker with less warning. And I've given you some graphs in your handout that show how much quicker from computerized simulations, not just the export simulation, but we had two models, the HEC model that the district used. And one of their graphs is from their models, and it shows floods arriving quicker. It shows floods staying longer. It shows the kinds of things that ruin this ranch for a cattle operation. In this trial, every piece of evidence, the district release records, and you have a PX 25 there that shows you natural flow, 2,000 cubic feet per second. What they're releasing, 15,000 cubic feet per second.
Those are some questions I had. The brief seemed like they're talking about two completely different records, and it's kind of hard for me to reconcile.
Great frustration about this entire lawsuit is that we can't get past the district's argument at trial was rain caused flooding, we didn't cause flooding, and they continue. And we said several times, we concede that, Your Honor. We even tried to get them to stop talking about it by conceding it in the record.
But, for example, at page 4 of their reply brief, you talk about the floodwaters being very fast in velocity as opposed to 1 mile prior floods, they're now much faster moving, and they say, no, the record doesn't back that up. They say that by the time the release at the floodgates may have been 40 miles per hour, but by the time it got to the stilling basin, it slowed down to 1 mile per hour.
May I approach this map? You have a small copy of it at your desks. It's PX 10. This is the lake. The copy you have from the defendants that they introduced in trial neglected to show the discharge channel, which is a big factor in this lawsuit. The evidence is this is a nearly 2 mile long discharge channel. It blocks. The river flow is coming in this direction. This channel blocks over half of the natural Trinity River floodplain, creating what the experts call the Venturi effect. It speeds the flow of the river waters up. This is a 6 mile dam. All of the water behind this dam is concentrated into 24 gates, and it's all released down this narrow, high-sided channel aimed right at this range. The southerly flow of water carries those. When you increase the release amount suddenly at the top of each hour like they do, it's just like pouring a big pitcher of water in your kitchen sink. It makes a wave go out across. They call them transitory waves. Both sides experts admitted, A, we had big sudden increases. One of your graphs, we had 135 exhibits, but one of the graphs you have show a sudden increase from a little bit to a lot at one time. That makes a big wave come out across, and it's confined. The wave can't spread out until it gets out of this discharge channel. The question, what can the eyewitnesses see? Can we measure it first? No, you can't measure it. There are no gauges in here to measure velocity, but neither the HEC models that the district did, none of the hydrology measures velocity. That's not what it does. Those gauges measure flow levels. The eyewitnesses saw. They drive over here, see the gates open, they can see these surges and high velocities crossing the range. A pilot in from an airplane could see the fast flowing water coming across here with the gates open up above the lake, the same slow, easy flow of the Trinity River normally. Fly back the next day and the gates would be shut, the water in that same flood flowing across this range, calm down and slow. He could see it as well as you could see it if I took a hose and hosed Mr. Hatchell down. You couldn't measure it, neither could an expert. But if I knocked him off his feet with a fire hose, you'd be able to see it.
Where's the wildlife refuge that they talk about?
The district owns all this land between the back of the dam and my client's property. This is the wildlife refuge that you're talking about. Some of it they gave to the state for deer. They bought this property. They didn't buy this because of the significantly improved nature of this range. That's really what this lawsuit's all about. Those surges can be seen coming all the way across here to this range. The air,
but they say there weren't any of the digging out or any of the other damage that occurred on the wildlife refuge that they say.
The evidence is controverted on that. It's disputed evidence in this record. We believe it did. There's a ranch up in here who had some of that same sort of damage. They said, no, we don't see a lot of that damage in here. That's what they claim. That's just one piece of evidence, and under standard review, it didn't carry the day. I
eyeball witnesses saw those surges come across here and saw what they did. There are no levees in here. You must understand, if I flow fast water across this floor, you might not see anything hurt. If I flow fast water into your bench hard enough, it might knock your bench over. These were the only raised levees, the ones that protected this range from the flow of river water coming through. When those waves hit those levees, they tore those levees out. When they tear the breaches in the levees, then you get a real fast flow through the breach, tears out these craters, sweeps away the fences. 150 cattle were swept away by these high velocities, not one, but 150.
Your brief says the changes that destroyed this ranch aren't addressed by computer models or data analysis.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's that mean?
All right. The physical destruction. There's two kinds of changes. One is the floods getting there quicker, lasting longer. The district admits, the gate operator said, at the tail end of floods, they keep releasing water, which makes the flood go longer, keeps the water on the ground, kills the crops. They admit, their records clearly show, the graphs clearly show, their graphs and our graphs, the flood's getting there quicker. That's related to the timing of releases. The surges, the high velocities, are just not the kind of thing that the gauges could measure, because none of the gauges were located in this area, and because the gauges aren't designed to measure velocity anyway.
Tishner says surges weren't talked about in the evidence,
The surges were admitted by their experts. Their experts said we have made those sudden releases. That does cause surges. It's well known by hydrologists. Our experts said it, but the eyewitnesses saw it. There's no explanation for surging waves and higher velocities. Nature can't do that, Your Honors. Not like we're talking about here. More water goes faster, might speed the river up from a mile an hour to 2 miles an hour. But the kinds of surge velocities we're talking about here and those high velocities, the experts explain, that can't happen in nature. That has to be something man-made that causes it.
Do you agree with the petitioner's answer to Judge Hankinson's question about the standard of causation?
I think the standard is a cause.
But for.
But for. And absolutely, that's what this evidence shows. The trial judge found in his findings that it happened, it was intentional, it was knowing, it's permanent, it's continuous, and it's inevitable because of the way this lake aims at this ranch, because it blocks off half the river floodplain, because of the way they're required to make these excess releases. The lake designer said, this plan, I'm quoting, this plan calls for excess releases, and we have made excess releases. Why? Because they store water 20 inches from the top of the gates.
But
if the water goes over the gates, the dam is gone.
Excess releases don't mean that there's going to be more or different flooding downstream.
You can't tell. Your Honor, it does in this sense. There's a certain amount of water that would be there naturally, and it would come naturally slow and even. When you release more water than naturally would have been coming, you change the curve of that flood. In other words, maybe the normal curve is here, and if you start letting out water here, the curve is faster, so you get less warning time to get your cattle out. If you happen to hit the river's natural peak with an excess release, then you're going to increase the peak of that flood. And there were many instances in which these graphs showed that the peaks were increased. So it doesn't mean we flooded more times. I don't think there was a flood from 1990 to the time of trial in which we wouldn't have flooded. But every year from 1990 to the date of trial, every year in big floods, little floods, and medium-sized floods, every year new craters, new breaches in these levees, new destruction and damage to this ranch. It was ruined, and that evidence is not. They don't even try to dispute that evidence.
When
they
were
conceded.
The levees put in?
I'm sorry?
When were the levees put in?
In the 1940s. Mr. Gregg bought the ranch in 1949 and started building the levees at that time. But he had operated an oil lease on this property. One of the witnesses was familiar with this ranch since 1940, for about 58 years. Have done bulldozer work on this ranch for Mr. Gregg's oil and gas operation, and have done clearing and was familiar with it from that time forward. The levees began to be constructed in 1949 when he actually bought the ranch, but we had many comparative floods. When I say comparative floods, we were able to show the flood statistics that in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, there were individual floods that were virtually identical to different ones of the individual floods after the lake. During none of those floods, had there been any of this kind of damage to the ranch. Never seen high velocities, never seen surges, never had the levees breached, never had craters torn out, never had fences swept away, never lost any cattle.
There's a certain reciprocity element to the argument that before the lake it didn't happen and now it's happening.
Yes, but it's not just before and after, because we also excluded every other cause. There is no other potential cause here. Now, you have arguments given to you in the briefs, but the district's experts testified repeatedly and clearly. I can give you a quote on other causes. Mr. Rutledge said this: "Well, in my opinion, there's really, this is in the record at 9 RR 175, 176, and 12 RR 23. And as you've explained to the jury, if that flooding being worse at the Gragg Ranch has to be the result of only one of two things, rainfall or the lake. Answer, Mother Nature or the district."
What about the testimony that Mr. Ratliff has cited that the experts could not separate the impact of the reservoir's operation from the impact of water from other sources?
That's just just spin on this record. You cannot measure precisely, exactly, inch by inch at any point on the ranch with any computer model known to hydrology. Both sides' experts said our models are not precise. Mr. Rutledge, the district's expert, said what these models give us is approximations of averages because they have to supply so much data. He said hydrology is more of an art than it is a science.
So he didn't testify that he couldn't?
He did say he couldn't precisely, exactly measure it. We quoted every time they said that he's talking about precisely or exactly measure.
But he did testify that he could offer an opinion about the impact of the reservoir.
Relative. Both sides' experts said these models are only good enough to give you relative contributions of the reservoir versus natural conditions. And we got relative and had, you know, an overwhelming amount of evidence. The trial judge found it rose to the level beyond a reasonable doubt that this ranch was causing it. But it was relative, and they did a little video that tried to show it inch by inch, hour by hour, at a specific point with gauges 50 miles on each side of that specific point. Well, it's guesswork, and our guy said you can't do that. And they said it to impeach those records and impeach the claim that you could do that inch by inch. But if you see a car wreck and you see a guy speed through a red light, you may not be able to measure precisely the moment that he came through the light or exactly how fast he was going, but you know he was speeding and you know he ran the red light.
In the historical information that was available and used by the experts, were there any periods of time where the rainfalls were comparable to the rainfall in the 90s?
Oh, absolutely. We cite you 6 or 7 years that had almost exactly the same rain as, for example, the 93 and 95 floods. And in those prior years, I can't remember the dates, but there were a number of those prior years. And in none of those prior years, with the levees present, Your Honor, had there been any damage to this ranch. And in every one of the major, every year, from not every flood caused every kind of damage. Let me be clear to say that. Some floods it would come quicker, some floods it would stay longer. Virtually all the floods, according to the witnesses, after they went out, they'd find new breaches in the levees, new craters, new holes dug. Some of it would just be extensions of old craters and such as that. But each flood is so vastly different. You might have a flood that lasts 2 or 3 days. You might have one that lasts 2 or 3 weeks. And the floods are so different, the volumes of water are so different, that it's hard to say that every kind of damage happened every time. But every kind of damage happened every year from the time this lake was started releasing water until the time of the strike.
How do you respond? We have quite a few amicus briefs.
Yes.
And how do you respond to the argument that all the water districts in Texas are going to go bankrupt?
Now, I'll read you a quote from the district's expert at this trial. Lake Conroe had that alert system because of their concern about flooding by their gate releases, didn't they? Answer. Let me give you the site on this. It's 11 RR 175-176. They had that alert system to have additional data to help them operate their spillway. Well, it was because of their concern, and the concern that's common to all water supply lakes, about flooding people downstream, wasn't it? Answer. And upstream as well. They all had that concern. That's true. You said in your speech and your talk, you gave a speech to all the hydrologists in Texas down in Houston. Your paper says that the San Jacinto River Authority, who filed one of those amicus briefs, faces a very common problem associated with water supply reservoirs. You said that, didn't you? Answer, yes. He also agreed that at Lake Conroe, you got briefs from two of the owners of that lake, that opening 5 gates only 2 feet would cause downstream flooding. Different than our case, cause downstream flooding. In contrast to this lake's 24 gates that were opened wide on numerous occasions. Downstream flooding is common as corn with chicken fried steak. Districts buy downstream flood easements all the time. This district bought downstream flood easements at Secret Creek Lake just north on this same river. Yet to read the amicus briefs, you'd think that the whole idea of them harming somebody downstream was new and novel. Water districts are immune from negligence. If only their negligent conduct would cause downstream flooding, why would they have to buy flood easements? They buy flood easements because in some instances, depending on the configuration of the lake, the elevations of the land around the lake, you're not going to be able to avoid causing damage with a reservoir built like this that tries to store water at the brink of overflowing the dam. Is there a public use for that? Certainly. They get to store more water. But the decision, the business decision to store maximum water, sealed the fate of this ranch. It meant there was no possible way. The testimony in this case is, once they built and designed this lake like they did in this location, nothing they could have done thereafter would have stopped the damage to this ranch. They could not have operated it in any different way. They couldn't, unless they took it out, unstopped up the river floodplain, took the discharge channel and pointed it somewhere else, widened out the release area where the water, instead of concrete, you know, you take a water hose with a lamp flow of water, you stick your thumb over the end of the hose and you cover up enough of it, you're going to get a steady stream. That's exactly what happens with the concentration of that dam coming down that channel.
Is there any evidence in the record that they attempted to buy part or all of this ranch or get a water easement?
The evidence is they called Mr. Gregg and talked to him about buying a flood easement. Never did follow up with that. They didn't try to buy 100% ownership, to my knowledge, but the evidence in the record is the district did approach Mr. Gregg about a flood easement early in the planning of their lake. Management changed, and after the management changed, he never heard a word from him. He'd written letters expressing concern. The changes from this reservoir are proven. I've never had a trial where I was more blessed by the way the facts came out at the trial. And I've tried a bunch of them in 30 years. All of their records show that we're right. Their records, forget computer models for a minute. Their record shows natural flow in one column, actual release in the other. And there were hundreds, there weren't hundreds of floods. There were hundreds of periods of time during floods in which they released a lot more than the natural amount of water. If you have a surging high velocity release, in a three-day flood or a five-day flood, 1 hour of those surges coming across the property could tear out every levee on the ranch. The situation is not that they always, constantly, from day one until the end of every flood, release excess amounts. But their experts explain, it's not the overall average amount of water. Even if you release less overall water during part of a flood, that doesn't answer the question of whether releasing more, higher velocities, sudden increases that create surges during short periods of time cause damage.
Were there any sudden increases that didn't?
That didn't cause damage? Your Honor, nobody could get out there in the water and stand there and time when they were making sudden increases and exactly when the dirt on the various levees and the holes in the pasture, which were underwater, and the fences got swept away. All we know is that they admit, their records show, there were sudden increases. They admit sudden increases caused surges. Eyewitnesses saw sudden increases coming across the ranch, and when the water went down, the levees were gone, the fences were gone, in some cases the cattle were gone, and great huge holes were in the ranch.
If that would have occurred because of the rain without the dam.
It can't occur because of the rain. It's impossible. It's a physical impossibility for mere rain to cause surges. It's a physical impossibility for mere rain to cause the kind of velocities that are caused by surging gate releases. It's a physical impossibility for nature without this lake to confine that water down to that narrow discharge channel and point it at this ranch. It's a physical impossibility for mere nature to squeeze that Richland Chambers floodplain, returning the river water. It used to come back up in there before the lake. Now it's all confined from here back over. And it's a physical impossibility for nature to take that floodplain and confine it into that little area like that and create those high velocities. You know, you pinch a river off. If there was an inch of water flowing across your floor in here and I could pinch it all off to an area an inch or two, it would back up behind that pinch off and it'd be coming faster through there than it was when it got there.
they say in their brief that you successfully excluded evidence about extensive damage to property in other areas, but not just the Trinity, not just in the Trinity River Basin.
As a matter of fact, we proved that other ranches just north of this ranch in the same floods had no damage. Had no damage during these same floods that they said.
Well, what was the evidence you're talking about?
They had a report from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers about floods all over Texas in 1990 that included newspaper articles and assessments of damages in small towns and a lot of irrelevant material. They didn't even make it a point of error that evidence didn't go in. Their problem was it was a volume this thick, and it dealt with other rivers, other streams, other places in Texas that were irrelevant, didn't have anything to do with this. The Trinity River in this particular area, and they never made a restricted offer of that information just as it related to the Trinity River.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I know this battle of citation to the record is troubling your court, it's troubling the Navy. But let's just put it aside, and let's take what Mr. Gregg is talking about. This discharge can, he omits any reference to the Stilling Basin, and his own expert's admission that the Stilling Basin slowed the water, it was coming out of the gates at 40 miles an hour, that it slowed it down enough that according to his experts, it would turn and go into the Trinity. Now, if you've got something with the kind of power he's talking about, it's not going to turn with the Trinity River flood.
What about the eyewitness?
The eyewitness, there was never an eyewitness that was looking at this dam and was equating it to here. Mr. Swerton, who's here, one of the owners of the leasehold estate, was flying his plane around. He said he went up north of not the Richland Chambers, but that he went up north of the Cedar Creek Reservoir. And the water seemed to be moving slowly up there. But when he got down here, the water was moving rapidly. He didn't say whether it was caused by tributaries coming in here below Richland Chambers. It was kind of a conclusory statement.
What about their assertions that your experts said there were surges?
Well,
and that there were increases in velocity that could cause this kind of damage?
When our expert was asked about it, he says, so there's no real validity at all to the concept that there's some surge or high energy that somehow comes out of the spillway, turns, goes 7 miles to the heavily wooded area, and still has energy left at the ranch. I just don't put any validity in that at all. Now, if that's agreement, then I suppose we've got agreement.
Mr. Ratliff, I just kind of remember from my science classes that waves in the ocean can go around the world.
Right.
It starts here and it goes around the world.
Correct.
Does it really make a difference if you have a surge that pumps a bunch of water in at one point and it actually can get into a river basin? Or is it your statement that the energy somehow is now dissipated that if I put a surge into the water at this point, that if it follows the river basin, then it must mean that the surge doesn't come out at the other point?
No, sir. No. If I'm understanding your question, I think also your basic science would tell you that if you put that wave through a Stilling Basin, which is a series of baffles, it will break the wave, and therefore there will be no wave to be transmitted on around the world.
So the energy, the Stilling Basin, if I put it down here, the Stilling Basin then takes the energy out of that surge, and so there's no energy left when it gets to the other end.
There is energy left, but it is minimal. I think the testimony, I believe it's pretty well uncontroverted, is the water would have left the Stilling Basin at about 1 mile an hour, which is less than the flow of the Trinity, because the Trinity is deeper. And as you know from your science courses, a deeper body of water is generally going to run faster. One of the things that they never, this strikes me kind of like Kumho Tire, where he was looking at the beads, and he said that told him there'd been a tire failure. Where is the evidence of this devastating effect across here? If it's going to cause damage at the Drag Ranch,
what is it going to do to this property immediately adjacent to that channel? Not a single witness, not a single expert ever said that that discharge out of that channel caused any of the types of horrendous damage that the council says happened on the drag. Now, he also says they excluded all other causes. When our witness says Mother Nature or this dam, Mother Nature includes more than just the Richland Chambers and more than just the water behind the Richland Chambers. As I've already said, there are many, many flood control and water supply dams upstream on the Trinity, unaffected by Richland Chambers. You've got the whole, this drainage area includes the whole Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area. All I will tell you is that what I think their own witnesses have said, that as counsel said, every flood is different. They said for us to really know whether this caused these things to happen at the Grag Ranch or not, as opposed to at the dam, we would have to know how wet the ground was at the time the rainfall started. We would have to know what the flows were in the Trinity before the rain came. We would have to, we would have to know whether we're dealing with plowed ground, whether we're dealing with pasture land, whether we're dealing with wooded area. All of these things, they said they would have to know before they could tell, based on any studies they had done, what the impact of the water coming out of this dam were on the Grag Ranch.
What about their historical evidence? They say that they've got all these floods that were comparable and that this kind of damage had never happened until after the dam was in place.
First of all, Mr. Gregg wasn't on the ranch during the 40s, where everybody concedes that the two wettest areas with the most flood were the 40s and the 90s. Most of the witnesses you heard from, to really know whether this caused these things to happen at the Grag Ranch or not, as opposed to at the dam, we would have to know how wet the ground was at the time the rainfall started. We would have to know what the flows were in the Trinity before the rain came. We would have to, we would have to know whether we're dealing with plowed ground, whether we're dealing with pasture land, whether we're dealing with wooded area. All of these things, they said they would have to know before they could tell, based on any studies they had done, what the impact of the water coming out of this dam were on the Grag Ranch.
What about their historical evidence? They say that they've got all these floods that were comparable and that this kind of damage had never happened until after the dam was in place.
First of all, Mr. Gregg wasn't on the ranch during the 40s, where everybody concedes that the two wettest areas with the most floods were the 40s and the 90s. Most of the witnesses you heard from all fell in periods of time in between them.
He says there were comparable floods.
Well, they're comparable in what regard? There are some that are comparable in height as measured by the gauges. There are some in which the rainfall, at least as recorded, was comparable. Although I believe the record would justify that the 90s were one of the wettest periods it's ever had, and if there is a period as wet, it would have been back in the 40s.
Let me ask a question.
Yes,
referred to wet a couple times. It seems to me that if I got a, I guess it's a hydrologist, I don't know.
These were hydrologists.
Other engineers out there, and I say, look at my land out here. And we know that this is a floodplain.
Right.
And we know there'll be some floods. I want you to design my land to help minimize the flood damage.
Sure.
Would it be possible for an engineer to go out and say, I'm going to build a berm out here or a dike out here that will be strong enough to withstand the 100-year flood?
Could he do that?
Yeah.
I doubt a hydrologist could do it by himself. I think a hydrologist...
Well, I say I don't know if it's a hydrologist, but some engineer could determine, I'll look at this land, it's
sure.
spread out over several miles, rain will fall, let's say a 6-inch rain in 1 hour,
right.
Let's say a 1-foot rain in 2 hours, there will be a flow that will occur because of the natural landscaping. So this dike here, or whatever I'm putting up here, this channel, will have to withstand some X pressure of water.
Gotcha.
Right? So it would be possible, wouldn't it, for an engineer to see the land, knowing the physical properties of rain, to determine that this rain, this hour, will produce this force, and this should withstand it.
I will certify to you, you would not get an engineer to guarantee that, because, and you certainly wouldn't on the Gregg Ranch, where the Trinity River bisects it, Tewaukini Creek bisects it, and...
But it's predictable based on rain, what kind of flow will come.
But where is the rain? That was one of the points that they made. We would have to have, they said, for us to translate this to the Gregg Ranch, we would have to have hundreds of more rain gauges so we would know where the water was coming from. If I design it against the river, but the great flow is because of a 6-inch rain behind the dam, I may well have designed it where it will hold the river out. It's not going to handle the flow from behind.
But the river would give you a design characteristic of the flow. So if you had 6 inches of rain behind the river, you'd know where it would be channeled, and you'd know what the force would be coming through there.
You knew all the channels, Your Honor. That's my only point. You don't know all the channels.
But you do know, because of that factor, you could determine when you have a 24 gate opening and this kind of water, you can physically determine the surge that will come out of that. You could determine that.
Physically determine the surge as it leaves the dam. I cannot, absent doing some sort of computer analysis, I cannot translate that water then down 7, 8, or 14 miles to the Gregg Ranch. That's the whole point. When that water joins the Trinity, it gets and joins Tewaukini Creek, it gets all balled up. And the best you can do, and I agree with what counsel said, the best you can do, and the best that our people could do using the Corps of Engineers standard technique, was to say we have to make some assumptions. And some of them, quite frankly, that's all they are, is assumptions.
So if their experts make some assumptions, this becomes a question of fact for the judge?
If their experts, no, sir.
If yours make assumptions and theirs make assumptions, then it becomes a question.
I don't think so. It still seems to me there's nothing about every model contains assumptions. And all I'm saying is the reason for that is you are trying to deal with Mother Nature. And Mother Nature doesn't act the same way every time under all circumstances. And everybody agrees to that.
Mr. Ratliff, Mr. Sod said that it's not unusual at all for a district to purchase a flood easement under these kind of circumstances.
Right.
So that all the amicus briefs, as I understand it, with the sky is falling arguments are really, we're not really going to have the sky fall under these circumstances. Is that usually the practice to buy flood easements under these circumstances?
I don't know. I would assume that there are times when it is. If you recall here, the question is, buy them at what cost? We now, according to this judgment, we now have flow easement across this ranch, and it's probably only going to cost us $10 to $15 million. So, yeah, you can go down, if they wanted to, they could go down and buy a swath.
But I'm just asking if that's the regular there are practice
times,
before.
There are times, certainly, immediately adjacent to these structures where they do acquire it. But I believe all that really goes to, Your Honor, is their claim that they really want to try in this case, and that is we were negligent in not acquiring those flow easements. Not, because they produced no evidence that we knew we were going to take this property.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the arguments for the day. The marshal will please adjourn the court.